When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
U.S. debt ceiling talks break off with no immediate plans to resume. Plus, what happens on the X date if no agreement has been reached?
It is effectively the date of default, whether it's a default on a debt or it's a default on a different obligation like a Social Security benefit. That has to be determined.
And the fight over the debt ceiling puts the spotlight on clean energy funding. It's Friday, May 19th. I'm Danny Lewis for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Anne-Marie Fertoli. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that move the world today. In just a few weeks, the U.S. could no longer be able to pay its bills. The Biden administration has been negotiating with Republican leaders from the House over raising the debt ceiling, which limits what the government can borrow. But now talks have broken off, and the negotiators have no immediate plans to resume discussions. Wall Street Journal Washington Bureau reporter Siobhan Hughes has the latest from the Hill. Okay, Siobhan, negotiators met this morning. Did they explain why talks broke off?
The lawmakers did not say specifically what the point of contention was or the point of contentions. It was described in broader, more global terms. The clearest detail we got came from House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who said something on the order of, we can't be spending more money next year. We have to spend less than we spent the year before. That suggests the Republicans are drawing a red line around going back to fiscal 2022 spending levels, which was one of the terms that McCarthy agreed to fight for when he was elevated to be House Speaker. So if that's one of the sticking points, that would expose a major gap between the White House and Republicans. Before today, we had really thought the issues centered around, for example, things like capping spending in future years, not reversing spending levels and going backwards to where we were previously.
So there's no plans for the next time they'll meet. What does that mean? There's no deal on the horizon?
As Patrick McHenry, a Republican from North Carolina and one of the lead negotiators, put it, we're at a very bad moment. The issue is that President Biden had been hoping for a deal by this weekend. That's because in order to make that June 1st deadline, the earliest by which the U.S. is thought to go into default, you have to start the process now. There are a lot of procedural hurdles built in the House. Lawmakers expect to have 72 hours to view the final text of a bill before voting on it. There's process to go through in the Senate. So we are really, really down to the wire here.
So the debt limit deadline is in just a couple weeks, like we've been saying. Where does this leave the federal government ahead of that?
This leaves the federal government on tenterhooks. And there are all sorts of people in the administration who are now going to have to think hard about questions like prioritization, which bills are going to get paid first, which payments are going to have to be delayed. And that opens up a whole can of worms with consequences for the U.S. economy, the global economy, and the political system.
Siobhan Hughes covers Congress for The Wall Street Journal. So that's the latest on the negotiations. But what actually happens if they can't reach an agreement by the deadline? Wall Street Journal chief economics commentator Greg Ipp examined the day-to-day cash flows and says the Treasury would have to take some big decisions about which bills to pay. So, Greg, what is the X date? It's June 1st, but what does that actually mean?
The X date is a term that we give to that date when the Treasury literally has no cash left in the bank to pay any of its bills. And that means that it has to decide, well, what are we going to do? What spending obligation that is scheduled for today are we not going to make? It is effectively the date of default, whether it's a default on a debt or it's a default on a different obligation like a Social Security benefit. That has to be determined.
So let's assume that on June 1st, the federal government starts with zero money. What happens from there?
Okay, first of all, the assumption about how much money they have on June 1st is a pretty big assumption. We don't actually know. It could be anywhere from zero to $150 billion. And that alone is actually quite important because if for some reason a lot of money comes into the Treasury between now and the end of June that we weren't expecting, they start the month with a big cash balance. And that means maybe they don't actually hit the X date in the month of June. But if at the other end they end up with almost no money in the bank on June 1st. Then on June 1st, they're scheduled to make roughly $100 billion of payments, including about half of that from Medicare. And they're only expected to get around $26 billion in revenue. So you can see there's a $75 billion gap there by which spending exceeds revenues. Some of those spending obligations cannot be made. Now, let's say they have enough money to make all those, but then they run out of money on June 1st. On June 2nd, they have to make about $25 billion in Social Security payments. And against that, they only have a moderate amount, about half that amount of revenue coming in. So you can see, once again, even if they manage to make it through the first of the month without hitting zero, on the second of the month, they might hit zero. And some Social Security beneficiaries may not get paid.
So take us forward a couple of weeks. Some tax revenue should come around the middle of the month. Does that help at all?
Yes. So the middle of June is a really big date. That's because some people and some companies that only file taxes quarterly will make a very large payment on June 15th. So a very big chunk of money comes in on that particular day. The Bipartisan Policy Center, which is a think tank that looks at this closely, they think they'll get $79 billion in tax revenue that day. Now, they also have to pay $2 billion in interest on the debt. But if they've run out of money by the 15th, a lot of that $79 billion will already have been earmarked to go to other bills that they haven't paid yet. So what do they do about that $2 billion in interest payments? They won't be able to make those payments. And that is the catastrophic default on the Treasury debt that everybody's worried about.
Mid-June is also when a $1 billion payment for Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, so SNAP, which is food stamps, plus Medicaid, Obamacare are all coming due. What happens to those?
So that's an important thing to remember, is that there are a ton of things that the federal government has to send out money for. I mean, it's like 80 million payments per month. We've all heard of Social Security. We've all heard of Medicare. But then there's Medicaid. There's Obamacare. There's veterans benefits, veterans Medicare. There's civil service pensions, military pensions, defense contractors, National Park Service. There's money for student loans, you know, and on and on and on and on and on. And so some people say, for example, some Republicans say, well, why don't you just prioritize? Make sure you pay the interest on the debt. And make sure you pay Social Security, and then just like pay whatever you can from the rest.
Say June ends and there's still no agreement that's been reached on the debt ceiling. What happens then going into July?
Well, let's imagine a scenario where they get just enough revenue in at the end of May and then at the in the middle of June to skate through June without hitting the X date. So something unusual happens on June 30th. The Treasury is actually able to make an internal transaction with some other intergovernmental accounts. What it effectively means is they get about $145 billion more room under the debt ceiling. But then July starts up, and you have all of those expenses all over again. Unlike June, you don't get a big pile of revenue coming in from those quarterly filers. And odds are, by the end of July, if you haven't raised the debt ceiling, there's definitely a default happening here somewhere.
That's Wall Street Journal chief economics commentator Greg Ipp. Coming up, the fight over the debt ceiling includes Republican proposals to roll back funding for clean energy. But many Republicans' districts are benefiting from new renewable power investments. After the break, we'll hear how the clean energy industry is pushing to keep those incentives intact.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
The fight over the debt ceiling has put the spotlight on clean energy funding that's a key piece of the Biden administration's climate agenda. Republicans have proposed rolling back those credits as a condition to raise the debt limit. But many Republican lawmakers have new renewable power investments in their districts thanks in part to those subsidies. Our D.C. reporter Daniela Cheslow says clean energy businesses are urging Congress to keep the incentives in place.
This is the sound of a factory making solar power modules in Dalton in northwestern Georgia.
And here we have the glass loading machine. The pneumatic system is lifting up the glass and loading it onto the front of the module.
Lisa Nash is the general manager of the factory. It belongs to the firm Q-Cells, which is owned by a South Korean company, Hanwha. Qcells recently announced it will expand in Dalton and open a new facility in nearby Cartersville. It plans to hire 2,000 more workers. Nash says federal incentives for renewables that were written into the Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA, played a key role in spurring those plans.
So we had the plans for the current expansion in play prior to the Inflation Reduction Act. However, that's enabled us to speed that up a little bit. And it certainly played a huge impact in the building in Cartersville.
The incentives include credits for making components for solar or wind energy, like photovoltaic wafers, wind turbine blades, batteries, and inverters. One industry estimate puts the IRA's support for clean energy at least $369 billion. And those incentives have been in question during the debt ceiling debate. The U.S. government could run out of money to pay its bills by June 1st unless Congress raises the debt limit. Republicans passed a bill in late April to raise that limit, but only if there are deep spending cuts. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy said at the time the bill would take aim at those new subsidies to renewable energy.
It will end the green giveaways for companies that distort the market and waste taxpayers' money.
The Georgia Solar Module Factory is in the district of Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. She voted for the GOP debt ceiling bill, and her office didn't respond to a request for an interview. I did speak to Republican Congresswoman Nancy Mace of South Carolina. She said there's a lot of solar energy in her state. In her district, a startup called Redwood Materials announced it would build a factory to recycle batteries and make components for electric cars. It expects to hire more than 1,500 people there. Its CEO has told the Wall Street Journal the Inflation Reduction Act accelerated its investment. Here's Congresswoman Mace.
For me, green energy is very important to the state of South Carolina. I want to make sure that we protect it and make it affordable for everybody.
If it's a concern of yours, why did you vote for the House bill that includes rolling back tax credits?
I negotiated a couple of things, like getting a balanced budget amendment, and also, you know, we wanted to pass it to get it into the Senate, into the president's corner, so that both sides could start negotiating.
So for some Republicans who support green energy, the Inflation Reduction Act incentives have become a sort of bargaining chip. Others in the party say the credits have to go.
I'm not voting for anything that keeps those subsidies in place.
Here's Congressman Byron Donalds, Republican of Florida.
So they're talking about billions of dollars of investments that we don't have money to provide.
Some Democrats are just as emphatic that they would not consider losing clean energy incentives. Here's Ro Khanna of California.
Non-starter. I don't think we should be hurting American manufacturing at this point.
Democrat Jared Moskowitz of Florida said he got the sense the debt limit debate is focused more on welfare, but he wouldn't rule out a debt limit deal that changed renewables funding.
The discussion seemed to be more right now work requirements. The president talked about that. The speaker talked about that. So we'll have to see what comes out, but I'm not putting any red lines on what I would or wouldn't vote for at the moment.
Meanwhile, the renewables industry is taking notice. More than 100 executives from clean energy companies this week wrote to President Biden and leaders of both parties in Congress saying the Republican debt ceiling plan would set their companies back and, quote, do terrible harm to American energy innovation. Another trade group, the Business Council for Sustainable Energy, says federal investments are already driving the clean energy transition. As an example, they say companies announced close to $17 billion in commitments to the North American battery supply chain from the time the IRA passed last August through the end of last year. Mike Carr is executive director of the Solar Energy Manufacturers for America Coalition. It represents 15 members with more than 6,000 workers in the U.S. He told me that even debating getting rid of the incentives is raising alarm for companies.
It's really important to remember that these companies are investing billions of dollars against a tax credit existing for that set period of time that's in the statute. So if anybody were to revisit that down the road, once that money's already been invested, that would really break faith with any of these companies.
Qcells, the company building out solar manufacturing in Georgia, told me they're not losing sleep over the debt ceiling debate because the investments were planned even before the Inflation Reduction Act passed. Another company, Freyr of Norway, is also investing in Georgia. It said late last year it would build a battery plant called Giga America at a cost of more than $2.6 billion. It expected to create more than 700 U.S. jobs. Executive Vice President of Global Corporate Development Jeremy Bezdek says the IRA helped FREYR accelerate its plans because it offers incentives that are only good for a certain amount of years. If those incentives are repealed, he says it wouldn't kill the plans, but...
Would we reevaluate the acceleration plan potentially? Just because, I mean, that's a little bit less economic incentive in place.
The new plant is set for a district represented by Republican Congressman Drew Ferguson. Ferguson also voted for the House bill that would roll back incentives for green energy. He didn't answer questions by email or in person about why. Beyond Georgia and even the U.S., Bezdek at FREYR says the U.S. incentives have sparked a global reaction. Spain, Germany, and France are all working on offering their own plans to encourage green energy production. And FREYR says the Norwegian government sent it a letter promising support for another major battery plant that it's developing in Norway. That support is part of Norway's response to the Inflation Reduction Act in the U.S. Bezdek says if the U.S. cuts back its renewable power credits, companies that had already invested in American plants could lose twice over, both missing out on promised incentives and losing a chance to invest in a country that would still offer them. For The Wall Street Journal, I'm Daniela Cheslow in Washington.
In other news, U.S. Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell, speaking at a conference today hosted by the central bank, said the stress on the banking system could mean rates don't have to rise as much to tame inflation. Officials have indicated that their decision on whether to raise rates again at their mid-June policy meeting could be a close call. Morgan Stanley CEO James Gorman says he'll be stepping down in the next year, marking the end of his 13-year run. During an annual shareholders meeting, he said that he expects a new CEO to be chosen within the next 12 months. And the FBI improperly searched a trove of intelligence gathered through a foreign spying law for information on people suspected of participating in the January 6, 2021 Capitol riot, as well as in the George Floyd protests. That's according to a heavily redacted opinion of the Secret Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court released today. Senior national security officials said the incidents took place before the FBI had completed a series of internal reforms intended to reduce incidents of noncompliance. And finally, in the last 6 months, flights headed to Hawaii, Florida, and internationally to Germany experienced turbulence so severe that some passengers and crew ended up in the hospital with injuries. Incidents like these are rare. Between 2009 and 2022, the National Transportation Safety Board found that only 163 people were injured during turbulence. But our travel reporter, Allison Pulley, says that climate change is increasing the chances of a more severe type called clear air turbulence.
So unlike turbulence that's caused by storm clouds, which is known as convective turbulence, clear air turbulence occurs, as the name might suggest, in cloudless skies and at higher altitudes. It's caused by wind shear, which means the sudden change in the speed and direction of wind. Because of global warming and climate change, the tropics are warming faster than the poles, and so the temperature difference is getting stronger, and that is distorting the jet stream or increasing the amount of wind shear in the jet stream, which then affects the planes that fly through it.
While it may feel frightening, pilots and physicists say that planes are built to withstand heavy turbulence. Just be sure to listen to the directions from your flight crew and remember to fasten your seatbelt. And that's what's news for this week. Our regular hosts are Anne-Marie Fertoli and Luke Vargas. Guest hosts this week were me, Danny Lewis, Charlotte Gartenberg, and Pierre Bien-Aimé. Pierre is also our producer, along with Kate Bolivant and Anthony Bansi, with help from Julie Chang, Daniela Cheslow, Zoe Thomas, and J.R. Whalen. And editorial support from Alan Haberchak, Sandra Kilhoff, Michael Cosmides, Catherine Millsop, Philana Patterson, and Chris Zinsley. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. We'll be back on Monday morning. Thanks for listening.